Welcome to Episode 8 of Holly Jolly Xmasu. In this episode, I'll be talking about Christmas Tenor Mood by the Nakamura Hachidai Quintet and Hidehiko Matsumoto. Released in 1968, this is one of the best Christmas jazz albums you've never heard. I'd never heard of it myself until a couple years ago when I was searching through Discogs trying to find albums similar to Akira Ishikawa's Drum Christmas Drum. I did a search on the Japanese script for Christmas. In the middle of my search results was this album cover with a very 60s-looking sultry blonde wearing nothing but a blue button-down shirt, sitting on a bearskin rug in front of an aluminum Christmas tree and an extremely unconvincing fireplace prop in the background. It was being sold by a shop in California, and they were asking what I then considered to be an exorbitant price for a record album, a whole $25. I figured there was no way I'd ever pay that much for an album. I didn't want to forget about it, though, so I added it to my Discogs want list. I'd check for it on other sites periodically, but to this day, I've still never seen another copy for sale. As my vinyl collection started to grow, I kept going back to the listing on Discogs. There it sat, never purchased. Eventually, that $25 price tag didn't seem so outrageous, and as I listened to more Japanese Christmas jazz, it became even more tempting. As the pandemic set in and the push to support small businesses grew, I figured I might as well do what I could to help out, so I broke down and ordered it. I'm glad I did. I'm always anxious when I buy albums, never knowing if the actual condition will live up to the listing. When Christmas Tenor Mood arrived, the sleeve was in exceptional shape, but the vinyl had a somewhat milky appearance. I was afraid it was going to affect the sound. Thankfully, my worries were for nothing. It was one of the cleanest albums I've received, with only a few clicks. As for the music, it's absolutely gorgeous. While doing research for this album, I was worried that I wouldn't be able to find too much about Nakamura Hachidai and Hidehiko Matsumoto. Thankfully, that wasn't the case. As it turned out, the two were both extremely notable and well-known musicians. Nakamura was not just an extremely influential jazz pianist, he also composed one of the most famous Japanese pop songs of the 20th century. While Hidehiko Sleepy Matsumoto was one of the most honored and decorated tenor sax players, both in Japan and worldwide. Born in 1931, Nakamura Hachidai was a composer and jazz pianist. He grew up in Tokyo and spent his youth surrounded by music. His family had a piano and gramophone in the house and a plentiful supply of records. He studied piano and composition at the Tokyo Children's School, although he frequently skipped school to go to the movies. When World War II broke out, his family moved around to avoid the air raids and finally settled in Kurume City, hometown of singer Seiko Matsuda, who I'll talk about at some point. Nakamura's music studies were put on hold during this time. Hidehiko Matsumoto was born in Okayama in 1926 and grew up in Hiroshima. While attending Hiroshima Prefectural Fuchu Junior High School, he joined the school's brass band, which was the start of his lifetime association with music. His first professional work as a musician came in 1944 at the Yokohama Sakura Port. He worked at a U.S. military camp while attending school, where he picked up his nickname, Sleepy. He first gained national attention in 1949 while playing with the jazz group CB9. Moving on to the album, though, it starts off with their rendition of White Christmas. Hidehiko Matsumoto takes center stage here with his laid-back sax carrying the melody for the first half of the song. Nakamura interjects with a brief piano solo, then the pair round out the song together. The rest of the band backs them with a bit of a bossa nova beat throughout the song. It's a strong opening for an all-around fantastic album. After the war, Nakamura entered Meisei High School, where he formed a music club. During this time, he became a big fan of American music. While still in high school, he attended a performance by composer Ichiro Tone, which sparked his interest in jazz. In 1949, he entered Waseda University High School in Tokyo. He took on a part-time job playing jazz piano in a cabaret in order to cover his school and living expenses. During the summer break, he played clarinet with the Yasuhiko Taniguchi Premier Swing Band at the Akadama Dance Hall in Okinawa. Next up on the album is Here Comes Santa Claus. Nakamura again yields the floor to Hidehiko at the start of the song. His sax playing is a bit more playful than in White Christmas, and he really starts to swing as the song progresses. Nakamura takes over halfway through, and like Hidehiko, plays a bit fast and loose with the basic melody. The rest of the band again frames the song with a Latin beat, and the pair finish out the song together. Each complements the other so that when they're playing together, you never feel as though one is overshadowing the other. It makes for a delightful listening experience, and you're liable to forget that you're listening to Christmas music at times. In 1950, Nakamura entered Waseda University. Along with bassist Shin Watanabe, he formed the band The Six Joes, which also included Hidehiko Matsumoto. The two would continue to work together off and on over the next two decades. The Six Joes attained national fame the following year, and Nakamura was voted the top pianist in the country by Swing Journal magazine. However, their success was short-lived. Nakamura wanted to branch out artistically, while Watanabe wanted to play things safe, commercially and artistically speaking. Nakamura and Matsumoto left the Six Joes, and in 1953 formed the Big Four, along with George Kawaguchi and Mitsuru Ono. The third song in the album, Blue Christmas, starts out appropriately enough with a bluesy intro by Nakamura. He's soon joined by Hidehiko, and unlike the previous two tracks, the two spend the bulk of the song playing in tandem. Each slides effortlessly into and out of the forefront, delighting the listener with a wonderful back-and-forth experience between Nakamura's piano and Hidehiko's sax. Each of the Big Four had been voted the best player of their respective instruments by Swing Journal magazine. The group was so successful that in December of 1954, they were the first Japanese band to sell out a baseball stadium with one of their concerts. The concert caused a media sensation and was covered by broadcaster Rokusuki A, who would later collaborate with Nakamura. Toward the end of the 50s, though, the popularity of jazz began to decline, overshadowed by rock and roll. Ironically, the driving force behind the growing popularity of rock in Japan was Nakamura's former partner, Shin Watanabe, who had founded Watanabe Productions. Next up is the pair's phenomenal bossa nova arrangement of Jingle Bells. One thing I've noticed is that, with a lot of the Japanese artists in the 60s and 70s, not only did nearly everyone cover Jingle Bells on their Christmas albums, but for a lot of them, this was the song they really got the most creative with. Nakamura and Hidehiko are no exception. They don't go as wild as some artists do, but they play with the basic melody a bit, and the end result has a great Vince Guaraldi vibe. In spite of the changing tastes, Nakamura remained one of the most popular jazz musicians in the country. As the market for jazz continued to shrink, Nakamura stuck to his guns, always expecting a turnaround in popularity. He devoted his time and energy into creating a fusion of jazz and classical music. This led to the Nakamura Hachidai recital at the Sankei Hall on June 5th of 1958. Despite moderately positive critical reception, ticket sales were poor, and Nakamura lost a significant amount of money. The stress of the production, the continued decline of jazz's popularity, and the financial strain led to Nakamura developing a drug problem. Up next, we have Joy to the World. As much as I like the variations the pair brought to Jingle Bells, Joy to the World is even better. The basic melody seems to serve as just a framing device for their improvised riffs. The rest of the band keeps the beat going, while Nakamura and Hidehiko do their thing, wandering off down their own jazzy paths, then occasionally coming back to the actual tune. Thank you. In February of 1959, reaching a personal low point, Nakamura attempted suicide. He managed to kick his drug habit and revitalized himself by focusing on his composing. Seeking to rebuild his finances, he approached his old bandmate, Watanabe, who encouraged him to study rock composition. At the time, the Japanese film industry flagrantly flaunted copyright laws and used American songs without permission. The U.S. started taking a stronger stance protecting American copyright interests, which created a huge market for original Japanese songs. Side 1 ends with Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. Rudolph is another one of those songs that tends to bring out the creative side, and this one is no exception. Hidehiko's sax playing is all over the map, while Nakamura generally tends to keep the song on track. It's a wonderful take on the song you're sure to enjoy. Watanabe recommended Nakamura to Toho Studios to provide the score for a movie. For this audition, Nakamura was told to bring 10 original songs to the studio by the next day. Without asking Nakamura, Watanabe hired TV personality Roksuki A, who had no previous songwriting experience, to write the lyrics. The two worked through the night composing the songs and managed to deliver the music on time. One of the songs, Black Petals, became a hit and featured Matsumoto on sax. Toho was so impressed by Nakamura and A's results that they hired Nakamura as music director. He provided music for several movies and won the grand prize at the first Japan Record Awards. Getting back to the music, Silent Night kicks off side two of the album. It's a quiet, laid-back, straightforward arrangement without any of the improvisation seen on the last few songs. Once again, the pair trades off for the first half, then comes together at the end. Thank you. During the late 50s, while Nakamura struggled at times, Matsumoto's career was a bit more stable and his reputation grew. He joined the Hideo Shiraki Quintet in 1959. By 1963, he was internationally acclaimed. That year, he became the first Japanese musician invited to the Monterey Jazz Festival. He formed his first ensemble in 1964, and he ended up playing with a veritable who's who of Japanese jazz musicians, including Takeshi Inumata, Akira Miyazawa, George Otsuka, and Isao Suzuki. In 1966, he played with the John Coltrane Quintet when they were touring Japan, and in 1968, he played on Hampton Hall's album Jam Session. The tempo picks up again with Santa Claus Is Coming to Town. Hidehiko's playful, rambling sax takes center stage here. He really cuts loose about halfway through with a fantastic solo that leads into Nakamura's only slightly more restrained turn. As the 60s started, Nakamura decided to try his hand at composing pop songs. This would lead to his greatest and most lasting success. Nakamura provided the melodies, while a friend from college, poet Shuntaro Tanigawa, provided the lyrics. While the two had a string of hits in Japan, Nakamura's biggest hit came from a song he co-wrote with Rokusuki A in 1961. While walking home from a student demonstration protesting the U.S. military's continued presence in Japan, the frustrated A came up with lyrics about a man who looks up and whistles while he's walking so his tears won't fall. He called the song I Look Up As I Walk, and when combined with Nakamura's catchy melody, it became a huge hit in Japan for singer Kyu Sakamoto. However, when released internationally 2 years later, it became a worldwide chart-topping smash under its better-known title, Sukiyaki. Considering how well the lyrics apply to the overall mood in 2020, it's apparently gotten a fair amount of airplay and renewed popularity in recent months. Next on the album is Silver Bells. This has a more subdued arrangement, although that doesn't stop Nakamura and Hidehiko from taking some liberties with the melody. It's set to a wonderful Latin beat that's a bit more Road to Rio than Lemon Drop Kid. Of the slower songs on the album, this is my favorite. Thank you. Toward the end of the 60s, as tastes began to change again, Nakamura once more changed his focus and started working on a symphony. He expected this to be the culmination of his musical career. While successful, the stress took its toll on Nakamura again, and shortly after the initial performance of his Water Song in 1971, he collapsed and was diagnosed with diabetes. The two cut loose again on Winter Wonderland. This one eschews the Latin flavor in favor of a more standard jazz feel. It features a fair amount of improvisation by both Nakamura and Hidehiko, and even the bass player goes off the rails a bit. It's a lot of fun and should appeal to anyone who grew up watching Charlie Brown. As Nakamura's diabetes progressed and he began suffering from depression, he withdrew more and more from his music. He passed away on June 10, 1992 from heart failure. He leaves behind an impressive body of work, and with Sukiyaki, one of the biggest selling singles of all time, and the only song in a non-European language to top the Billboard charts. O Little Town of Bethlehem is next. The slow, downbeat arrangement is nearly out of place on the album. It's a quiet, almost somber piece. Nakamura's piano playing stands out, which is a bit of a contrast to the rest of the album, which is more sax-focused or equally divided between the pair. Thank you. Matsumoto remained active and continued to gain acclaim. In 1982, he was invited to perform in the Soviet Union as part of the Japan-Soviet Cultural Exchange Program. He eventually became one of the most decorated jazz musicians in Japan, receiving the grand prize of the Japan Agency for Cultural Affairs in 1977, the Minamizato Fumio Award in 1978, and the Minister of Education Award for Arts in 1987 and 1988. He was awarded the medal with purple ribbon for his great contribution to the Japanese jazz world in 1991, and in 1998 he received the medal of the First Order of the Asahi. He died on February 29th of 2000 at the age of 73. The album wraps up with Auld Lang Syne. I'll confess, I can take or leave Auld Lang Syne. It's more of a New Year's song, and I would generally prefer another actual Christmas song over it on any given album. That said, Nakamura and Hidehiko do a wonderful job with the tune. They don't improvise as much as they do on some of the other songs, but there's enough to keep it interesting. I'd just as soon listen to this as Guy Lombardo, which is a pretty fair compliment coming from me. And there you have it. This album did a great job bringing together both my love of jazz and my love of Japanese Christmas music. It has a lot going for it in the way of appeal, being jazzy enough to please jazz fans, but not so far out there as to drive away more casual listeners. It has a good selection of songs. It leans more heavily to the secular side, but there are a few religious songs, and Joy to the World is one of the standout tracks. I'd pick a favorite, but with an album this exceptional, that's not only hard to do, but kind of irrelevant. The bottom line is that this is a beautiful album all around. Next month, I'll be discussing the 1972 album, Merry Christmas from Cellstars, by Takao Harada and Cellstars. This is one I'm pretty excited about. From what I can tell, it's not very well known in Japan, and it's virtually unheard of elsewhere. You'll want to stick around for it. In the meantime, if you're looking for more podcasts to quench your Christmas thirst, there's an entire Christmas podcast network out there. Here's a brief sampling of some of my favorites, including Tim Babb's Can't Wait for Christmas, which was the first Christmas podcast I ever listened to, Craig Kringle's excellent Weird Christmas, and Dwayne Bailey's Tinsel Tunes, which explores the history and trivia of some of your favorite Christmas songs. First, though, is Todd Killian from Christmas Clatter with a word about his Christmas puzzle exchange.
Hello, this is Todd from the Christmas Clatter podcast. One of the great things about Christmas is the busyness of the season, the running around, the decorating, the shopping, the visiting family and friends. But another great thing about Christmas is the chance to unwind, to take a big deep breath and relax away from work and school and everyday life. A great way to rest and relax is to work a puzzle. That's right, a jigsaw puzzle. They've been around for seems like forever, but they're a great way to relax your mind and ease the stress of the holidays. There's nothing better than turning on those classic crooners like Bing and Frank Sinatra, Andy Williams, and being gathered around the kitchen table with your closest friends and your closest family, working a puzzle together. Well, here at Christmas Clatter, we are putting together a Christmas puzzle exchange. This gives you an opportunity to receive and send a Christmas puzzle to one of our great listeners. If you would like to participate in the Christmas Clatter Christmas Puzzle Exchange, please send an email to christmasclatterpodcast@gmail.com. And in the email, please put your name and your address, and please put Christmas Puzzle Exchange in the subject line. Please do this before October 2nd. And together we can all be around our table with our friends and family, working a puzzle together and making the most of every second of this Christmas season. That email again is christmasclatterpodcast@gmail.com. Happy puzzling, and remember, keep Christmas hope alive every day.
Oh, hello there. I didn't see you come in, which is odd because I set up this microphone just to record. I'm Tim Babb from the Can't Wait for Christmas podcast, and I'd like to invite you to join us every month as we talk about the traditions, the music, the movies, the food, and the fun of the merriest holiday on Earth. Plus, you'll help us answer some questions like, what is the greatest version of Jingle Bells?
Bing Crosby.
Is Die Hard a Christmas movie?
Yes.
What is the best Christmas food?
Well, everybody knows that one.
Hey, imaginary listener, it sounds kind of like Kermit the Frog. Can you be quiet? If you give away all the answers, they're not going to listen to the show.
Oh, right. Sorry.
Anyway, that's the Can't Wait for Christmas podcast. New episodes on the 25th of every month, wherever you get your podcasts, or at can'twaitforchristmaspod.com.
I know you. You're tired of the same old joy of human compassion, overflowing generosity, and quaint, totally anxiety-free coziness of the holidays. You need Christmas to get a little bit weird. I'm Craig Kringle, and I've got you covered. On the Weird Christmas Podcast, I talk to a never-ending garland of writers, historians, filmmakers, and rampant weirdos who do their best to make sure we don't forget just how beautifully odd this holiday can be. We cover everything from Krampus to Christmas werewolves, the real winter elves like the Scandinavian Tomten and Nissa, to Iceland's 13 Yule Lads. And every year we share a good old traditional Christmas ghost story to keep things festive. I also host an annual flash fiction contest so we don't have to read Dickens again. So if you're a real traditionalist who wants Christmas to get back to its roots of creepy monsters, acknowledging the frozen, lifeless heart of winter and eating animal heads, come over to the Weird Christmas Podcast. Or check out WeirdChristmas.com and all the surreal vintage postcards I share on social media. So Merry Christmas, and here's hoping Krampus doesn't whip you off to wherever he's from.
Hi everyone, I'm Dwayne from the Tinsel Tunes podcast, and I have a questionably unhealthy obsession with Christmas, and I love Christmas music. So come with me on a journey as I go into detail about the history and stories behind a wide range of Christmas music. For instance, did you know that Silent Night has the honour of being the most recorded Christmas song of all time, and has been recorded over 137,000 times by separate artists? Or that White Christmas was actually written in the height of summer? Each song, either recent or a golden oldie, has a background, and I want to share them with you. Come join us for our second season and listen at tinseltunes.com. We are on all the main podcast services, or you can find us with a simple Google search. Also follow us on all the social networking platforms, and I hope to interact with you soon.
Thanks for listening, and I'd love to hear your feedback. Leave a comment on the website or send me an email at hollyjollyxmasu@gmail.com. While you're at it, leave a review on iTunes. You can also find me on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And remember, if you enjoy what you're hearing, you can support me by buying me a cup of coffee. You can find the link to my Ko-fi page on my website. A donation is only $3, and any donations received will be used to purchase new Japanese Christmas music to review for future episodes. Thanks! Until next time, stay safe and remember to support your local record store. All music and excerpts are used under fair use policy for commentary purposes, and no copyright infringement is intended.
It's better that way. It's better.